The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So imagine that in your heart there's a seed. And that seed can sit there for a long time, maybe for a lifetime, and never germinate. But if it germinates, it's a seed which brings a lot of goodness with it. Something that helps you to feel kind of confident, helps you to feel a sense of goodness and warmth inside, a sense of certainty, a sense of purpose and direction in your life. And that if you nourish that seed, it just kind of grows in the warmth and the value and the fullness within you. So this seed, in the teachings of the Buddha, is, and he referred to it this way, is faith. And the word for faith in the ancient language is sada. And it's possible it's not the faith is not the best English translation of an ancient Indian word, but faith kind of gets to it a little bit. I like the word faith because for me, faith is a kind of has an emotional quality to it. And also the original meaning of faith in English was not believing in something, unless the word believe had its original meaning in English, which was to hold something dear, to love something. And originally when it was first used in English, you know, 1,000 years ago or so, it didn't refer to a doctrine that one believes, and it also doesn't refer to what it has come to in the last decades. Sometimes when we say someone believes, it's only what they believe, it's a little bit dismissal of them. You know, it's like that doesn't really count because it's just a belief or something. But it used to be that when that the word believe meant that this is what you hold dear, it's where you put your heart, what was heartfelt for you in your relationship to something, some reality, some transcendent reality perhaps in religion. And so the idea of faith is something in Buddhism also has it very intimately connected to the heart. And so it's where we put our heart, or what we welcome in our hearts, or what we do wholeheartedly. And it has less to do with the belief system than it has to do with the purpose and direction that we're confident in going in. So and in fact, this word sada, the primary use of it in the ancient teachings of the Buddha was to describe the confidence or the sense of inspiration that someone had who began the practice, began the path of liberation. And for each of you, the fact that you're here today and meditating, you must have something that you have faith in, something you trusted, something you had confidence in enough in order to do this, because this is a strange thing to do in relationship to what most people do. And if you come here regularly, it's not strange. But, you know, to be able to sit still, was 35 minutes of sitting still and not talking. And it's an unusual thing for a group of people to do. It's unusual to close one eyes and just kind of be with one's breathing or be with one's inner life and be mindful. And so you had to have enough faith, if I dare use the word for you, enough trust or confidence in something that you're willing, even if this is your very first time here, to try it out. So what was that? I would like to say that it's something very precious, something very valuable, even if it's just curiosity and that what you're here to do. So we have the seed. And that seed can be discovered, that seed can be watered, nourished, and that seed can grow and develop and become something that's very, very meaningful for people. And at some point that seed, when a seed germinates, at some point it becomes rooted and the plant grows and it gets really securely well rooted. And you know, if that seed, you know, it's very small, the seed of a redwood tree. And but you know, when that redwood tree is rooted, it's probably going to be rooted for a few centuries. You know, there's some of the trees around here are you know, over 1,000 years old. And so to, at some point, our faith becomes deeply rooted. And the Buddha then used a different word than sada, the word I mentioned before, for the rooted faith. And he uses the word pasada. And so there's a distinction made, there's a transition made from having this sada faith to having this pasada faith. So he used the metaphor of a seed. I would like to kind of change metaphors as I try to explain this and use the metaphor of a stream or a river. That our lives involve being in a stream of our life. It just flows along. Our bodies, you know, our bodies change and they grow and they do their things they do over a lifetime, and there's a stream of our physical body. There's a stream of our emotional life that changes and varies over time by the impact and what happens around us, and it's a constant stream of change that goes on. There's a stream of our mental life and our thoughts, our ideas, the things that influence it, our concerns, our inspirations. There's all these streams, and our life is a stream of change, a stream of unfolding that keeps going. And so if we're going down this stream and we're not paying attention, if we're in the canoe and maybe, you know, we're not even paddling because there's enough current taking us downstream, and we're planning, you know, what we're going to do tomorrow, or we're rehearsing tomorrow because we're afraid of tomorrow, or if we're lingering too much in the past and rehearsing our regrets and our, you know, and conversations we've had, the events we've had, if we're in fantasy world, caught up in that, or if we're too kind of preoccupied with our emotional life, they're not really paying attention, then as we go down this stream in our canoe, that's the current's taking us down, we don't notice that the stream splits in two. And since we're not paying attention, we don't have anything to do with which of those forks we take. And perhaps the strong current is taking us down the fork on the right. And that's where all the rapids are. And the waterfalls. And it takes us to a whole different, also not only that, but there's kind of a divide in the terrain, so that's a whole different watershed you're going down. You know, and if you're taking the stream to the left, that's a different watershed. And there it's mellow and peaceful and beautiful, serene, and it's just a nice place to go. So if you're not paying attention, there might be a strong current that takes you one way or the other. But you don't have any choice because you're not there to even notice. You might not even notice the split. I've gone on the freeway sometimes and didn't notice the exit I was supposed to take. What was that about? I was involved in some kind of thoughts. So I can imagine doing that in the stream going down. But if we're present and at paying attention to what we're doing in this river, and we're really here, then when we come to that fork, we can kind of nudge the canoe one way or the other. We can pull out the paddle. Or if we have the paddle, you know, over the back, kind of as a rudder, we can kind of just tip it one direction. It goes one way or the other. We have some choice in which direction it goes. And sometimes if it's strong currents, we might have to paddle hard to kind of get it into the fork that we want. And it can make a world of difference which fork we take, which watershed we go down. But if a person doesn't know that there's going to be a difference, if it never occurred to a person, if a person just feels like you know, life should be easy and you don't have to row your boat, just kind of like everything will be taken care of, and there you go, down the waterfall, because you're not paying attention. Or you feel resentful that you have to do any paddling whatsoever. You know, you're kind of angry that you weren't given a motorboat. All kinds of reasons why a person doesn't get involved. But make a choice. And so part of the function of mindfulness is to help us be in the present moment enough so we can see that in the present moment, there's actually always a fork. And which fork are you going to take? And are you going to take the fork that leads to greater harm or suffering, or the fork that leads to harmlessness, to greater lack of harm, to freedom from suffering? And in the Buddhist tradition, that little distinction, which maybe is huge, represents two different watersheds you can go down. And, you know, it becomes a very different terrain, very different world that we go into, perhaps, depending on which one we take. And we make this, in every junction we come, we have that. It can be as simple as going to the supermarket to buy groceries, and you feel a little bit like you're in a hurry, or maybe annoyed you're there, or I don't know what, or you're greedy to get the best tomatoes, something. And so you come to the door, and there's someone there who's maybe an old person who's kind of hobbling a little bit and struggling with their cart. And so, so you don't notice in that. You're not present enough. You're concerned with your tomatoes. And so you kind of just cut the person off, and the person's a little bit disoriented, and you get to go get your tomatoes. Or you notice what's happening, and you stop, and you support to help the person. Step back and let the person get through the door. A small little thing, teeny little difference. If you're present, which of those forks do you take? For some of us, I think, it's not a choice. It was like, it doesn't feel like a choice. You'd say you'd step back and let the old person get through and not kind of make it hard by forcing your way through first. But if you're not paying attention, you might not do that. It's happened to me in my life where I've gone through doors and I didn't notice the other person who was there. Only when I went through, I said, oh no, what did I just do? I kind of cut someone off and I felt bad. So I'm capable of that kind of mindlessness. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe you're more mindful than I am. So the suggestion is every moment, actually, there's a kind of a fork we can walk, we can take. And then do we know what the choice is? Do we know what the useful choice is? What a supportive choice is? And can we have faith or confidence in a choice that's nourishing, that's freeing, that's meaningful, that brings us more alive, that connects us, that brings us into the territory, the watershed of non-harming, where we don't harm others and we don't harm ourselves. And this is kind of the crux of what, at least my understanding of what the Buddha was teaching, was how we can live a life without causing harm. And the primary thing that he kind of pointed to for us to be able to do that was to take a good, careful look at ourselves to discover how we bring harm to ourselves. And so it turns out that if we're greedy, not only do I harm for those tomatoes, not only do I kind of make it harder the day for the old person trying to get in, so it's a little bit harmful there perhaps, but the very fact that I was greedy, if I'm sensitive, actually is a kind of an ouch. It's kind of, if you're really sensitive and aware, it kind of hurts to do that. But if you're not sensitive, if you're busy and engaged and you have more things to be greedy for, then you have a whole list and you're busy doing them, you don't have time to notice that the ouch of being greedy. But to be mindful not only of the present moment, be mindful enough to really feel the impact of the choices we make, the thoughts we have, the feelings we have, the things we say, things we do, we'll get plenty of feedback about what the choices we have, you know, the forks that we can go. And if I'm sensitive enough to you know, the impact I'm having on the old person at the supermarket and the impact on myself, again, it becomes crystal clear that I would step back and let the person go through the door first. If there's no old person going into the supermarket door, and I'm sensitive and aware, and I feel like greed for the tomatoes, I would probably say, this is harmful to feel this greed. It hurts. It's subtle, but it kind of hurts. And I would not do this. Maybe I'd let go of it. And the fork that I took is to go into the supermarket without the greed. I might still want to get tomatoes for my family, but I wouldn't be greedy for, I wouldn't act on that greed. Now this can seem like, you know, pretty simplistic stuff. It can seem like it's not very much worthy of a great world religion, that tracking the present moment and choosing to what you do at a supermarket door and paying attention to things like greed or hatred or fear or, you know, just a whole range of things like that, jealousy. But it turns out that if we can begin taking a fork where if we have enough sense, enough trust, enough confidence that it's valuable to go down the harmless way, enough trust to realize that it's worthwhile or I'm going to try out going down the door of paying attention and becoming sensitive, going down the stream of being sensitive and choosing not to be greedy for long enough to see what happens. To be long enough not to be caught up in hostility and hate. Not to be caught in the fear and anxiety that I have. And for some people, where they discover that, where they can kind of explore and going down that stream is not to the supermarket door, but in their meditation practice or something like that. Because as we meditate and sit, it becomes, you know, we're really trying to be in the present moment. And as we're more and more in the present moment, we become more sensitive to what we're doing. We notice the directions of the mind, the thought patterns of the mind, the motivations that drive us, the things we're caught up in. And we see the consequence of those. We see which ones of those harmful, hurt, ow, that's, and we see there's a little fork. I can maybe let go of that. I can change what I'm thinking about. I can have a different attitude to what's happening here. I could try to focus on just the breathing and keep it really simple so that all these other concerns fall away. And slowly, as people do something like meditation, they're actually choosing to go down a different stream. And at some point, we go down that stream far enough and a warm seed of faith begins to germinate, where we have a sense, oh, wait a minute, this is valuable. This is a potential. This is a possibility to feel the kind of integrity, to feel the kind of wholeness, to feel the kind of maybe peacefulness. This is a valuable state to be in, to be in this kind of more settled, peaceful state than it is to be caught up in my anxiety, caught up in my hostility, my concerns for revenge, my jealousy, my fantasies and my greeds and my desires and my lusts. This is actually meaningful. And then that sense of meaning, that sense of purpose, that sense of value of this way of being, a person starts having something like a greater trust in it, a greater confidence in it, a greater faith in this possibility. That faith, when that begins to be awakened, that is a motivating force for beginning to follow more wholeheartedly a life to do more of this, to live that way. To not just do this in meditation, but start paying attention to daily life as well. It's, you know, it's not that, you know, it's okay, it's nice to have a peaceful, settled, whole sense of peace for oneself in meditation, but why leave it there? Why not start living that life or finding how to live that in the rest of our life as well? So that not only do we live a life of harmlessness towards ourselves in our lives, but we also live a life that's harmless towards others. in our lives. We don't cause harm to other people. In meditation, we've learned how to not harm ourselves. And there's a lot of self-harm that goes on. There's harm, people are self-critical. People are have all kinds of negative ideations and thoughts and attitudes towards themselves. But even if they don't have negative attitudes themselves, to be caught up, as I said, with greed or hostility towards the world around us, that also is a kind of harm that we do to ourselves. And so to learn how to let go of that, and then learn to do that, or to being interested in doing that in the rest of our life. How can I do it there too? Not because it's an obligation, not because the Buddha said you should, but rather because the seed has been sprouted inside of you, germinated inside. The seed of goodness, of wholesomeness, of something that feels wholehearted, of rightness, rightness in a sense of something that feels deeply satisfying. A sense of maybe this feels more true. This is a true way of being that feels more true, more integrity than the streams of greed or the streams of hostility or the other kinds of streams. So when that faith has been born, then germinated, that is a motivator to, okay, this is what I want to do. And for some people, it's a little bit of faith, which is great, and they do a little bit of it. For some people, it's a medium degree of faith, and they do a medium, they apply themselves to this path to practice in their life. And for some people, the faith is huge. For some people, it becomes, their life is not the same afterwards. They decide, this is what I'm going to commit my life to. This is what I want to do. And some of that, to really see it in a big way, the faith and the value of it, is not only to understand the full impact it has on ourselves and the potential and how it's so much better than what we had been doing. The other is to understand its tremendous value for our society around us. That it's not just a self-help program we're involved in to make ourselves feel better. Have privileged roles in our society and just be able to enjoy it better. But rather, it's often the opposite. It's to, with people who really take this Buddhist path seriously, and this is kind of going to, some of you, it's going to be bad news. It's fairly common for people to be downwardly mobile. So now you're ready to go off find something, find a religion that's more about, prosperity. And so the idea that that there's something more valuable than, a different kind of wealth than money and houses and cars and all kinds of things. And the Buddha talked about faith, this faith in this path of this possibility to a life of harmlessness. He talked about it as a treasure inside or a form of wealth. So some people understand that wealth so strongly and the value of it that this seems like the thing, for some people it's the only thing they want to dedicate their life to. This is what they want to do. And so it's a wonderful expression that one of my Zen teachers said. I thought, I was inspired by this. He said, it's nice when people come to me and say, Buddhist practice is good, but I really want to bring it into my life. That's a nice thing. But he said, there's another possibility. And that is your primary dedication, when people say that, it means their primary home is their life out there. And they bring Buddhism into it. But it's possible to make your practice your life. And then the task is, how do you bring your life into it? It's a different, different way of looking at it because of a sense of importance. So there's a whole range of how strong that faith is. And they're all good. I have tremendous faith myself or trust in any degree of faith that the person have is right for them. And it puts them down a little different stream. And it turns out we come to these streams all the time throughout the day. And we have a little choice to make this way and this way. Do I snap at someone here? Am I kind to this person here? Do I hold my tongue right here? Do I look inside of myself here and see what's going on right now? Or do I lash out? You know, all kinds of things we do. I suspect that if you just watch yourself, those of you who might be on the computer a fair amount, watching the web or something, doing something there, it'd be interesting to consider what streams you're choosing to go down when you do that. And there's probably a different stream every time you click, a different choice. Are you choosing a stream that's for your own good? Are you choosing a stream that allows that seed of goodness that's inside to grow and nourish you? Or is it a seed that kind of closes it down? And I see that in myself, that if I'm on the computer, on the web too much, it's actually something feels deadening inside. I think I kind of, you know, it's like maybe more like forgetting to water the seed, the plant, and it kind of begins to shrivel up. And so, you know, so what are we doing with our lives, and how do we take care of it and responsibility for it? And there's a lot of, and what do we have, what is our primary thing we have faith in and purpose in? If someone came from Mars, anthropologist from Mars, and it was curious about you, and but didn't really understand how, your language, couldn't read your thoughts, but they followed around and just kind of kept track, kept a log of all the things you do. And or maybe they can see your thoughts even. Imagine that. And all the kind of thoughts, they have a log of all the different thoughts you have. And then they went back to headquarters at Mars, and they had this wonderful report to make. And they noticed, said that, yeah, that this, down there on the planet Earth, a lot of people, you know, this word faith is really important for people. Some people, you know, they have, it's really interesting what they have faith in. There are some people who have a lot of, how they behave, what they have really faith in is anxiety. Boy, you can't believe how many people trust and value anxiety. The amount of time they spend on it, the devotion to it. I mean, there must be high devotion, Church of Anxiety. Like this is like, this is so important for them. Or there's there's also the faith that people have in greed. Well, you can't believe down there on planet Earth. They like, it's like, you know, there's, not only do they have tremendous confidence and belief in the value of greed because they're so focused on it. They have high priests and priestesses who you know, extol the virtues and celebrate the value of greed and get everyone along and inspired to go out and be consumers. It's really, there's a lot of faith there in that. And then there's a whole category of a particular species of faith down there on the planet Earth, which has to do with anger and hostility. Boy, they people really believe in the value of that because, boy, they really hang on to that at all costs. And they're not going to give that up for anything. That's what they believe in. So what do you have faith in? What report does the Martian anthropologist write up about you if they really got to follow it? We don't think this way. It's kind of a little odd to look at, you know, something like anxiety or or hostility or greed as being something we have faith in. But, you know, there's a kind of devotion or dedication to it we have. To switch what we have faith in. To have faith in the opposite of those. To have faith in generosity, love, being peaceful. So there's always these forks, and mindfulness puts us in those forks. Fortunately, if we go down the wrong fork of the stream, a few seconds later, there's another fork. It's a very forgiving, like, you know, flow of water, because at any moment, you come to another fork, and you can choose the one that's harmless, the harmlessness. So you don't have to get too caught up in, you know, that, oh, I blew it. You can actually always make a change, always ever changing. It doesn't really, not so helpful to spend a lot of time caught up in, I made the wrong choice. Because if you're caught up back there, the last juncture, or the juncture you made a year ago, what you did, you might be so involved you don't see the next fork you come to. And if you don't see the next fork, you're not then, currents which are not your own are going to carry you maybe down the wrong fork again. Every moment you can redo it. It's very forgiving. It can be very inspiring to realize, oh, I can make a difference here. And so the value of faith in Buddhism is a faith and the confidence, yes, I can make a difference. I can gently move in a different direction. What's important about this idea of a stream, and why I chose it today, is that a stream has currents. They're not necessarily your choosing, or not necessarily your making. Maybe that's a better expression. Not your making. We're being carried by so much more in our lives than our own choices, our own thoughts, there's a huge currents and streams that represent our lives, many of them which are maybe subconscious, unconscious, they're bigger than us, all kinds of things. And it's not just about us making choices. We don't want to put too much responsibility on our shoulders. But what we're doing in the choices we can make is we're choosing which currents are going to support our canoe, which streams, which conditions are going to help us. And so we're trying to choose conditions which are supportive, not the waterfall. As we go down these streams and we see them more and more and better, then at some point the confidence we have in this, the motivating confidence, and this word sadha is a motivating confidence. Yes, I should do this. I have confidence in making these choices. I have confidence in this path. This is valuable. At some point, that becomes a faith that's called pasada. And pasada has a double meaning of being both means faith or confidence, but also means bright and peaceful. And so some people will translate it as serene faith. It's not zealot faith, you know. It's fiery faith. There's a peacefulness in having it. But it becomes at some point unshakable faith. And this is where the plant has germinated, the seed has germinated and grown, and the root is so deep that it's maybe impossible to now destroy the plant. So unshakable faith at some point. And so the Buddha talked about at some point to come to a juncture where one's faith and confidence in the practice, in making these choices, being present in this path of harmlessness is so strong that it's unshakable. At this point, with the unshakable faith that he talks about, comes with a certain consequence. And this is a consequence maybe some of you are not going to want, just like the downwardly mobile thing is bad news. One of the consequences is you're no longer going to believe in the value of complaining. You might still complain, or you might still have the impulse to complain, but you're no longer going to invest anything to it. You no longer have faith in the value of complaining. You're confident that this is not where you want to live your life. No question. Unshakable. Complaining is not supportive. Maybe even more dramatic is that you no longer believe in the value of anxiety. You might still become anxious, but you're no longer identified, you're no longer kind of wedded to it, you're no longer kind of, there's a little bit like you step back and say, well, I'm anxious, but this is not worth investing in. I don't really believe in the value of it anymore. That's a pretty powerful thing. And what would motivate you if you're not anxious? And then, when you have unshakable faith, this unshakable, peaceful confidence, you would no longer believe in the value of hostility. Even the most mild form of hostility. You might still feel that sometimes, but I don't believe in it. This is not valuable. It's not where I devote. That's not what I have faith in anymore. I think this is these are powerful turns. And how do we get to this place of unshakable faith that the Buddha talked about? He talked about that when you see that there is greed in your mind, and then you see after a while that there is no greed, and you see it clearly, not that it's disappeared forever, but you have a palpable, visceral, clear sense of the peace, the openness, the clarity, the goodness, the value of a mind that has no greed. To really see that and know it in a clear, clear way, and to see that this is valuable, this is important, that gives birth to unshakable faith. To do the same for hostility, to do the same for jealousy, to do the same for anxiety. There's all these mental forces inside of us, these mental kind of motivations that we can have that are harmful, that have the ouch factor built into them. And it isn't just simply they go away because we've been distracted. We found a good TV program. But there's a feeling of the clarity and the peacefulness, the openness, the safety of not having it here at all. To see that contrast, see that as a potential, and to know clearly and well enough, this is my potential. Some people will say, this is my true nature. Though the Buddha, in ancient Buddhism, they never would have used that kind of language. It's more like, this is the potential, this is a possibility, this is something that's worth knowing, this is something to have confidence in. This is turning down the river, not just a different stream, this is the different river that I'm going to go on. This is the ecosystem I'm going to invest myself in. And so have that unshakable confidence. What I think is quite significant about this for people, you know, who are familiar with different religious traditions, I find it significant, is that we're not talking about a creed. We're not talking about a belief system. We're not talking about something that, you know, can point to as being, you know, a unique Buddhist belief as opposed to beliefs of other religions. We're talking about something that you can discover in yourself by this heightened mindfulness, attention, and clarity. We're talking about qualities of your own emotional and motivational life, where you see it and know it and see what's valuable. What the Buddha was pointing to is how thoroughly it's possible to take this other fork in the river, and how thoroughly it's possible to experience the heart, the mind, the goodness, the value, the satisfaction, the liberation of the heart and mind, how from these forces of greed, hate, and delusion, that we know something that feels really, really valuable. And if we understand how much greed, hate, and delusion permeates our world, and how painful it is for everyone to have this so much going on, then we maybe have a sense of how valuable it is for some people to really get to the bottom of these forces and really of greed, hate, and delusion, and find a real alternative to them. That's a life that's well worth living. That gives a lot of purpose and value, and it can be done. It can be done in small ways, in the ways that work for your life. It can be done in medium ways, and it can be done in big ways. But there's whichever way you do it, whatever faith you have, whether you know it or not, every moment you come to a fork. Two roads diverged, two streams diverged in a world. And unfortunately, if you take the lesser traveled one, it'll make all the difference. Unfortunately, because not so many people take the path of harmlessness. So, faith, confidence, trust, whichever word you like. May the seed of some faith germinate in you and grow and become deeply nourishing and satisfying and for you and your life. Thank you.